In Greek mythology, Titans were deities who preceded the Olympians. Recently, the kidney community lost one of its Titans, Robert W. Schreier, who was a former president of ASN, then the National Kidney Foundation, and then the International Society of Nephrology. I first met Dr. Schreier in 1992 when I was working as a lobbyist for the chairs of departments of internal medicine at U.S. medical schools and teaching hospitals. Dr. Schreier taught me about medical research, particularly at the National Institutes of Health and the Department of Veterans Affairs. I never understood why he spent so much time mentoring me, but he did, and I'll be forever grateful. I was thrilled to reconnect with him and his wife Barbara when I joined ASN in 2008. David, I thought we would start there. You know, one of Dr. Schreier's real passions was medical research and science. And I know, you know, I'm really curious as to what's happening both with ASN's efforts to advocate for increased funding for the National Institutes of Health, but particularly for research funding at the National Institutes of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases within the Kidney Urologic and Hematology Division.
Well, as you know very well, because you have been intimately involved in this throughout your tenure at ASN, it is annually a major priority of ASN on Capitol Hill to secure the most robust funding that we can secure for NIDDK and for NIH in general. There's various programs that ASN has to really support research and researchers and to get them interested in both research and in nephrology. And we are hosting a webinar with NIDDK on Tuesday, February the 2nd. And if you are possibly hearing this podcast after that date, it doesn't matter. You can go back to ASN online and you can download. The whole thing will be recorded. You'll be able to see all the slides. So that will really, really talk about what's happening in terms of ASN's mission with helping support kidney research. And also, you know, what's in the NIDDK research and workforce pipeline. And that's going to feature Dr. Roz Mannin, ASN member, talking about ASN's role, and then Dr. Rankin and Dr. Ketchum from NIDDK.
Yeah, and I should say, I think if you can participate live, great. If not, I think the recording and the sort of webcast is going to be outstanding. I know Dr. Rankin and Dr. Ketchum have incredible data about the research enterprise and sort of what's happening related to kidney research. So I think it's an outstanding opportunity for the community. But also I think we'll frame some of our priorities, both from a funding perspective, but also just in terms of encouraging early career investigators in particular, both MDs and PhDs, to submit their best ideas to NIDDK. I think one of the things that gets lost in these discussions is that part of how NIH funding gets allocated is based on the number of grants that are submitted. And so if a specialty has fewer grants, then there's less money allocated. So we do really need the community to submit for funding. And obviously with the additional support that NIH has gotten for COVID-19 related research, there's an opportunity here when you think of the patient population with kidney diseases and sort of the Venn diagram overlap between the kidney community and what's happening with COVID-19. We just have a unique opportunity here, and I hope that you know the community takes advantage of it.
Absolutely correct. And I know that's been something that throughout your tenure at ASN, you have really stressed and made a huge priority for ASN and for its members. But it does also go to something else, which is it does involve what Congress will do and what they will fund and what they won't. And that leads us into kind of what we might want to talk about next, which is what is the world is happening in Congress right now.
Yeah, so maybe we can start with just sort of a organizational check-in. So the 117th Congress has started. The Democrats have maintained a slight majority in the House. It's less than it was in the 116th Congress. Remember, Congresses are every 2 years. So there's a 2-year period here where the Democrats control the House, but again, with a much thinner majority than they had before. And then in the Senate, it's a 50-50 split. And so if there is a tie, then the Vice President, Kamala Harris, a former member of the Senate, would be in position to vote to break any potential ties. I guess my first question before we start to get into substance is just what's going on with the, like, just how did it sort out in terms of the organization of the Senate?
Well, that at this moment, as we're recording, is still in play. And, you know, some people say Mitch McConnell, you know, really played his hand well. Some people say not so well on trying to make sure there was a guarantee that there would be no filibuster measures in the rules that would end the filibuster. And therefore, he wanted that to be a part of the agreement before they agreed how to organize. Because at some level, when you're 50-50, you really do have to have some sharing of responsibilities. The Democrats will still control the chairs and control the schedule of the floor and committees. But a lot of the committees will probably end up being split 50-50 between Republicans and Democrats. But at the moment, that's still, you know, that's still about to happen. And of course, there is the pending trial of former President Trump as well. So there's a lot happening there that we're going to have to keep an eye on.
So if we put the impeachment trial sort of to the side, recognizing it's sort of looming over everything over the next, say, 6 weeks or so, and focus a little bit of sort of this power sharing arrangement. As I understand it, the sort of deal that's emerging is that with the keeping of the filibuster, that a lot of key legislation would require at least 60 votes to move forward. So even though there's a 50-50 split or a 51-50 split, if you include the vice president, you're going to have to find 10 votes from sort of the other party to move anything forward. And that's then balanced with this issue of, and again, this is just sort of historical, but it seems like the agreement's going to be that the Democrats would be able to name the committee chairs, which is important because that sort of drives the agenda. However, as you mentioned, the committees would still, in all likelihood, be split 50-50. So you have this very delicate balance in the Senate. I just want to make sure that I have sort of my facts right before we move into some of the substance.
You do have your facts right. I would never rule out the idea that something could go wrong with that scenario, with the number of characters at play there. But yeah, that is the basic understanding, the kind of approach that probably will be taken.
I think a mistake a lot of people made, myself included, is, and again, you're more of a Senate person than I am, but I think a mistake a lot of us made is we just assumed that the Democrats sort of had the majority with 51 when you counted the vice president, and therefore they would be able to make a lot of these rules, and that's not the case. And because the Republicans held the Senate in the previous Congress, if they aren't able to reach agreement, it goes back to whoever the control was, which in this case would be the Republicans. So the sort of negotiating rules and sort of the runway here, if you will, is really challenging. And so I think it'll be interesting, as you say, over the next week or so to see how this sorts out.
Yeah, the Senate has its own set of rules and kind of approach that are particularly unique. Interestingly enough, just the House of Representatives rules are really very much based on the House of Commons in the British Parliament. And the Senate are somewhat similar to the House of Lords, but I think the rules can be very much different and can be very archaic and can be very surprising.
So why don't we use that as a moment to transition to the sort of substantive issue, which in terms of what's happening on Capitol Hill, if we could talk a little bit about the sort of COVID-19 relief efforts. I'm just curious as to, you know, the president, the new administration, Biden-Harris has put forward a proposal. What do you see happening on that front?
You know, it's interesting. Some Republicans and some Democrats have complained that they don't think that the $1.9 trillion is necessary that big or that it needs to be done that fast. Biden has not budged on that. And what we're really kind of waiting to see is, does Biden, you know, because Biden is such a presence from the Senate, is really try to use his personal influence and his relationships to bring about a negotiation between Democrats and Republicans for a straight bill. And the other option is, and the House is preparing a resolution that would help go in this direction, the other option is one of our favorite subjects, the archaic form of reconciliation, whether that could be used by the Democrats, and that way they could get their bill passed without any Republican votes in the Senate. But the catch is it doesn't build you anything in terms of, you know, bipartisanship or any type of like thing to base. It doesn't really provide you a good base to move off of, and in terms of a working relationship.
Yeah, and there's at least two schools of thought here. I mean, there's the one school of thought, which is early on you want to do everything you can to try to build, you know, some level of bipartisan support for what you're trying to do. That, of course, takes time, and so it may take a while to sort of get anything done. That, I think, gets to the second school of thought, which is, you know, it's more important sort of to get wins early and get momentum. And so, you know, while bipartisanship's important, it's more important to move forward. And, of course, you have the additional layer here of a pandemic and people's lives and everything that's happening with struggles with the rollout of the vaccines. So what's your best guess as to what's going to happen over the next couple of weeks?
Best guess, don't really know, but best guess is that you'll see some breakthrough on the COVID-19 package one way or the other, whether it breaks to a straight out vote with a straight bill or whether it breaks for a reconciliation package. I think you and I both would be very surprised if the trial for impeachment actually led to the removal of Trump from office, even though he's no longer in office. So however you will deal with that. And I think you're going to start to see some really major legislative efforts begin to ramp up on both sides and both chambers. I don't expect one chamber to lead at all. I think both of them are going to be moving pretty fast. And there's some things that Biden has put out there that Democrats would really love to have, like the $15 minimum wage, and really a big push in the area of equity, which is really going to be a huge issue for this administration, and is really what they're pushing on the executive side through executive orders.
Yeah, so that's a great issue to end on. So you know, as we think about what's happened over the last year, of course, there's been everything with the COVID-19 pandemic, but there's also been just an amazing amount of discussion and I think momentum and movement around issues related to systemic racism. And as I've thought about it, you know, I sort of organize my thoughts into two categories. One is diversity and inclusion and thinking about what you can do sort of organizationally and what you can do in different sectors related to being diverse and inclusive. And then, you know, the needed equity that comes there. And then the other part of it, of course, is, you know, health disparities and health inequity and what we can do in terms of sort of, if you will, social justice and healthcare. And that's sort of a second sort of set of activities. And I know that, you know, one of the things the president's been able to do, you know, as Congress is sorting itself out, is issue a number of executive orders. Many of those have been to reverse the policies of the previous administration that he can reverse through executive order. But another, I think, has been to put down markers on what his priorities are going to be moving forward. And as you said, equity and health equity is one of the priorities. So what's in these executive orders that we should focus on?
Well, let's talk about two for the moment. And what would you like to hear about the one that's probably the most pervasive, or the one that's more focused to start with?
Yeah, I tend to go from the general to the specific, so I think I would suggest that order.
Okay. So on inauguration day, on January 20th, President Biden signed an executive order. He signed many, but he signed an executive order called "Advancing Racial Equity and Support for Underserved Communities Through the Federal Government." So this executive order is basically going to require every agency department within the federal government to work through OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, and come up with first, in the next 60 days, what are the best ways to evaluate and assess barriers, for various communities of color and ones that have been underserved through the programs that agency has and policies that agency or department has. And then as that's happening, then they have to prepare simultaneously to produce over the next 200 days using those techniques to actually evaluate all of the programs that agency has in terms of where there are barriers and where there's a real problem for underserved communities. And in that, they have to, at the same time, be preparing for, by 1 year from this date of January 20th, 2021, so it'll be January 20th, 2022, they have to have reached an agreement with OMB about what are the major functions of their budget and their policies that need to be adjusted to really deal with underserved communities. And as you can imagine, that is, for HHS alone, for healthcare, that is a huge undertaking. And in the kidney space, you know, you know as well as anyone, Todd, how important it is for us to really be clear-eyed about the disparities and the inequities that are present in kidney care. So we really have a lot of work to do to try to make sure that during this assessment, the government really focus on areas that they could really make a difference and that would be really important and essential for these underserved communities.
I think you're right. I mean, I think we're certainly, as a community, that the kidney health disparities and inequities in the U.S. are remarkable. And I think there's an opportunity here really to address them in a meaningful way with the help of the administration.
I would agree. Absolutely.
So that's the broader one. What about the more specific effort?
So on a more specific level, very much focused on COVID-19, which of course is still a very large target to be aiming at. At the same time, the next day, President Biden signed an executive order that created what is called the COVID-19 Health Equity Task Force, which will be chaired by Dr. Marcella Nunez-Smith at Yale. And this is going to be an opportunity for the government to take a task force and specifically look at what is happening in COVID and how it is being translated into the disproportionate rates of COVID infection in certain communities and disparities in COVID-19 outcomes by race, ethnicity, and other factors. So this is also a big one. I think there's a lot of interest in seeing how much kind of latitude this task force is going to have and how much kind of oomph it's going to have and how much, you know, what its impact is going to be. So, but that's one that is also really interesting to ASN, as you know, and that we are watching and trying to help shape how some of that input goes into them as well.
So I'll give you the last word. What happens with these two executive orders? What are just from a very sort of concrete perspective, what are two or three or four things that you think can happen?
They're going to have to be really expansive in their thinking, or they're going to fall short. In other words, so we're looking at kidney patients, and you're not going to really be able to deal with kidney patients if you don't deal with some of the social determinants of health. And some of the factors like housing, if you're going to talk about home dialysis, and some of the shortcomings on transplant rates for people of color, those are things that if they really don't go expansive and really don't reach for big change, I think they'll fall short. But I don't want them to fall short, and I think we all want to see them do what they can. And so it's going to be very interesting, and hopefully they will be very successful.
Well, David, thanks. I appreciate it. I look forward to seeing sort of what happens over the next couple of weeks. It really is going to be fascinating.
Thanks, Todd.